Moncrief on News Talk.
Time was that if you got a job with a large multinational company, the possibility of working in another country was generally viewed as a perk. But since the pandemic, that seems to have changed. The Financial Times journalist Polita Clark has been writing about this. Afternoon, Polita.
Hi, Sean.
If you compare today to, say, when you received your first foreign posting, is it quite different?
I'm afraid it is in many, many companies. When I was sent off to Washington, D.C. to be to be a foreign correspondent for an Australian newspaper group, it's actually quite incredible to look at the package of benefits that I had. I had a really generous rent subsidy. I had really good health insurance, plus all of these allowances that allowed me to buy, from memory, a brand new car. I could get my own phone bills paid, I'd get newspapers, books, a whole bunch of other expenses. And that was absolutely normal at the time. If I'd had children at the time, their school fees almost certainly would have been paid. That's certainly what happened to other expats that I knew at that time. They also got things like annual flights home for not just them, for the whole family, and loads of other services to make sure that they weren't out of pocket compared to what would have happened if they'd stayed at home.
Mm. Now, was a lot of that predicated on the idea that there would normally be only one adult working out of the parents, and therefore that
yes.
parent would bring everyone with them?
Yeah, that is very much what the situation was at the time. These were packages that were designed for a man and his non-working wife, essentially, because that was actually quite relatively common at the time, although I will say that even then it was starting to fade out, and you saw a lot more women entering professions, sometimes out-earning their partners. And so what used to happen is, you know, you were basically, when you were asking people to go and take one of these postings, they were potentially going to be losing at least, up to half or more of their family income. And also, the person earning a decent income was going to be asked to really puncture their career, take a big career break that was going to be problematic. So really, that's when things started to get difficult, I think, and remain quite difficult, to the point that some employers now try, in universities in particular, I know that they try to organise jobs for spouses to try to attract people to move, particularly if they're asking to move countries. So, yeah, I mean, that was one of the problems, for sure.
But perhaps the pandemic hastened this process a bit.
Yeah, so the really interesting thing is, you know, I just anecdotally, I kept on hearing from people in a range of different industries that they were finding it harder and harder to persuade employees in their organisation to work abroad, to take these international assignments. And one theory that I came across, or that I've come across from people who've been in the global relocation business for decades, is that after the pandemic, people in their 40s and older discovered that it was great to work at home, and they really felt that they could actually work really well, essentially from their kitchen table, often with foreign teams in other countries, other people just not in their own, just in their own organization, but in other organizations as well. The pandemic opened our eyes to how easy it was to just talk online on a Zoom and whatever. So the idea of uprooting the entire family and getting everybody to go and move abroad when you could have so much better communication with people, it seemed, online, just made the whole idea of moving permanently much more difficult.
Mm. But yeah, at the same time, one hears about digital nomads and they're roaming around the world doing their jobs somewhere ever. Is that a different set of circumstances?
Right. So this is the interesting thing, that what also happened during the pandemic was that it seemed to sort of usher in the growth of this so-called digital nomad, you know, someone who was often in their 20s, just had a laptop and was able, actually actively encouraged by a lot of countries who issued special visas for people who were tech savvy enough and wanted to sort of travel the world, issued these visas so they could come and work in these countries for as long as they liked, or up to a point. And so a lot of these people in global recruitment and global relocation thought that this was actually the future of work. Mm. But then it turned out that, you know, actually when you were looking to send slightly older people to slightly more business critical jobs, then that's where you ran into real trouble. So a lot of people think it's a bit of a generational thing, that younger people, particularly if they don't have a family, they're up for a lot of these roles. But when it comes to getting people to, you know, go and do a something like establish an outpost of an organization in another country, that's when it gets tricky, because they're likely to be more senior and therefore likely to have a working partner and maybe some younger children, and that's when it's both expensive and difficult.
Yeah, I've also read some interviews with digital nomads, and there seems to be a trend when they hit 30 that the kind of gloss goes off that that lifestyle, and they actually want to go and live in a real house or you know, a real apartment and those kinds of things. Presumably, though, this for multinational companies where you have to have executives in certain parts of the world, this is going to be turned into a severe problem for them.
Yes, and it's actually quite interesting to see how some of them have been adapting. So Inca, which is the biggest owner of IKEA stores, they've actually undergone a bit of a shift, really. They still do post people abroad in senior roles with their families, but they've seen a big, big rise in more flexible arrangements. So that's where people can either commute to other countries to do jobs or just work on one-off projects. So they don't actually move permanently with the whole family. They might go and work for a month or two and then come back, or they might sort of work for a few weeks and come back depending on the geographical challenges. So they're seeing a really big increase in that. And they're saying that that's partly because of the problem of the dual career, but it's also because the rise of remote work has just made the idea of moving seem much more tricky and difficult and problematic.
Plus also probably there are parts of the world that people just don't fancy working in.
Well, there is that. I mean, I think there definitely have always been what are called hardship postings. And so if you're trying to persuade people to go there with a much less generous package and the prospect that your partner might not be able to work at all wherever you're going, and if there's, you know, high crime rate, high pollution, you know, all of these other things that make life seem less attractive than where you are, then yes, it just gets more difficult.
Polita Clark is a Financial Times columnist. Polita, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.